continue our exploration of the four adhidhana, the four resolves, commitments, foundations. And today with the third one, we'll consider the third one and how it's relevant to our practice. The third one being chaga, which can be translated both as relinquishment and also as generosity. So today we'll talk about the aspect of relinquishment, that interpretation of it, and in a couple of days I'll talk about the interpretation of it as generosity, and we'll see how they're related. So chaga, beautiful term. So relinquishment and generosity, you know, they are related. One leads to another. It's when the heart frees something up, gives something up, that there is this generosity of giving it to someone else, to yourself. So it's that act of giving up, offering up of the heart. That is the act of generosity. It's not hanging on to. So it's the same. They're the same action of the heart, really, the giving up, the opening, the not attaching, the non-attachment. That is the relinquishment. And so too, it's also the generosity. It's like, oh, it's when you don't attach to something that you're generous. You can offer it up to someone else or yourself. And a heart that offers up, a heart that doesn't cling or hang on, is a generous heart. I first came across the word chaga, actually, some years ago in a teaching. I heard that chaga is precursor to happiness. And it made sense to me. It made sense to me. Especially it brought up this understanding of someone I know who is a happy person, is just a genuinely happy person. And the quality of their heart is one of really generosity of the heart. You know, their heart is caring, generous, you know, in interacting with them. They don't want to be right. They, you know, if there is an interaction with them, there's just generosity and care. So there is that generosity of heart, that generosity in their care and affection, which of course leads to their mind being easy and free and happy. And it just, in that moment, this teaching made sense for me with thinking about this person, how just the ease in their heart, not clinging to, wanting things to be a particular way, especially in interpersonal interactions and relationships, just leads to their happiness. There's just this ease. So chaga, in terms of relinquishment. So I'd like to offer some different words and let these wash over you and see how they work for you. I think they each capture a different nuance of this teaching of relinquishment. And by the way, just to tell you what the outline of the talk is, so I'll be talking about what it is, what it is not, and then how to practice this. Well, why to practice it? And then what to practice it with. So kind of the four W's, but not exactly the four W's, something like that. Anyway, so what is it? So continuing to explore together, what is it? Just turning it on around in our mind. I have to say one word that earlier came up for me before I really sat with it today. I really appreciate actually having to give a talk today on this topic. Yeah, I'd never given a talk about relinquishment. And So it was actually a wonderful opportunity to really sit with this. And at first, the thoughts that were coming up previously is, relinquishment. Okay, I like the word relinquishment, but it's also it's a near neighbor of renunciation that sometimes is translated as renunciation. And I know that renunciation, at least in English, and for me, has a bit of a, even though it's a beautiful practice, but it has a bit of a negative, austere connotation for me, renunciation, just a little bit, just a tad. So I was just admitting that to myself and exploring my own relationship to renunciation, because to me, as I was sitting with it at first, it seemed like, oh, I have to give up. I have to kind of give it as renunciation. Oh, yeah, to be a good Buddhist, I have to renounce. I have to shave my hair and do this and do that. It's this renunciation. And as I explored it more and more and sat with it and then had conversations with Gil, it actually just opened up to the depth of this beautiful practice. So it's from that place I want to share it with you, because it really opened up for me today, from going like, I'm not so sure about this renunciation thing, to like, wow, this is such a deep, beautiful practice that I'm just getting to see why Chaga is one of the foundations, why it is. And I hope through this talk, I'll take you through this journey with me, the journey that I've taken. So exploring some different meanings of this aspect of Chaga. So there is renunciation. There's also relinquishment, which to me is actually has more positive connotation, because when you relinquish something, you're giving it up because there's something more beautiful. There's the heart is opening up to a deeper purpose. So it's relinquishing, it's giving up, it's offering up, as if offering up onto an altar. Like, okay, I give this up. I give this up. It's a sacred offering. It's a release. Relinquishment is a release of something that the heart is hanging on to. It's releasing it. It's letting go of it. It's letting go. And this release comes from a deeper place. It wells up from a deeper place of goodness, of wanting to really let this thing go. It doesn't come from a place of should. I'll talk more about that in a moment. Another word for it, another turn of seeing this is non-attachment. Is not attaching to something, is offering up, letting go, not attachment, not being attached to it. Another one is laying down a burden, when you're like, okay, enough. I've had enough of you. Thank you. Thank you, but no more. You lay the burden down. You lay it down. You relinquish it. You relinquish it. You give it up. You offer it up. With an open hand, it's an opening of a hand instead of having a fist. Also a release, as I mentioned, a release, a surrender. Not surrendering as if you have been dominated in battle, but just a surrender from the heart, like giving yourself to. There's an ease, a physical ease to that. So exploring this, I think what comes up is all of these words are in the neighborhood of, you know, this beautiful deep practice of non-attachment, letting go. And also what it conjures up is when you're fed up with something, for example, when you're fed up with suffering, when you're completely fed up with something, and this automatically, naturally, from the heart, this feeling comes up that, you know, I'm not into this anymore. This just doesn't work for me anymore. And the heart wants to give it up. The heart just relinquishes it. It puts it down. It's not interesting anymore. And that actually becomes a renunciation, a letting go with a commitment. So in that way, actually, it relates beautifully to the teaching Gil offered yesterday, how how he was talking about the watering hole, suffering being the watering hole, to sit at the watering hole of suffering. And that relates to this teaching of chaga, relinquishment, also, because if you sit at the watering hole of suffering and you sit with it, at some point you realize it's not interesting anymore. You get fed up with it. You see how it hurts. You see how perhaps the habits of the mind are hurting you. You're hurting yourself. This repetitive pattern, for example, could be a repetitive pattern, could be hurting you. And it's like, okay, that's enough. That's enough self-judgment. It's enough. I offer you up. I relinquish you. I give you up. I'll talk more about what to give up. But I want to switch for a moment to what relinquishment is not, what it is not. So the opposite of it is obviously accumulation, attachment. So, you know, imagine for a moment if there was some kind of a training. So if you had entered a moral training, a training that wasn't this, but a different moral training in a retreat, where the training was accumulate, get attached, accumulate as much as you can, accumulate, be attached, more money, more power, more recognition, connections, number of Facebook friends, houses, vacations, experiences. It's never enough. It's never enough. And so imagine how that would feel. Just for a moment, feel what that would feel like if that was what you devoted yourself into. Shout out a few words. What does it feel like somatically as you tune into it? Exhausting. What else? Sick. What else? Overwhelming. Never ending. Yeah. The word hopeless. Yeah. For me, the word is heavy. It's like, oh, burdened. Burdened with all this, like, oh, there's never enough. What else? Any other words?
Empty.
Empty. Yeah. What else?
Urgent.
Urgent. Yeah. It's like, oh, I have to do this, after that, not enough time. I have to do this, after do that, after that. Not enough time. This, that. Yeah. What else?
Discouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, feel into it. What else comes up? Depleting.
Hopeless.
Feel the weight of it. If that was what you took on, accumulation, attachment, more and more and more and more, never enough. Feel it in your body for a moment. We'll shake it in a moment, but for now, really feel it. Just to feel. Just get it in your bones. Like, what?
In prison.
You feel like you're in prison. Yeah. Chaos.
Sickening.
Suffocating. Okay, good. We can let that go. Okay, let that go. Take a breath. Let that go. Take a few breaths, actually. Let that go. Okay, let that go. All right, now. Really let that go. Relinquish. You don't have to be attached. Don't have to hold on. Don't have to accumulate. You can let it go. You can soften into it. There isn't much holding. There isn't much to hold on to. Real, there isn't anything to hold on to, really. Now allow yourself to feel the weight of, just as if you opened your wrist, you opened your hand. You just let go. You offered up. You relinquished all this heavy weight that you just had a moment ago with the idea of more and more. Feel it in your body. Offering up, relinquishing. Letting go. Releasing. What comes up now? What do you feel?
Freedom. peace, freedom, lightness.
Energy. Yeah, energy.
Relief.
Ease.
Do you feel it in your bones? Do you feel it in your body somatically? Relinquishing, letting go, offering up slightness. Yeah, maybe a little bit. Okay, I'm done. That's it. That's actually it. That is the practice. That is the teaching of Chaga. Relinquishing, giving up, not hanging on to. I'll talk a little more, but that's basically it. That release, that freedom, that ease that comes up from letting go. It's simply that. So how do we do this practice? How do we do this practice? It feels good. It feels right. Peace, ease, lightness. So do you have to? Well, you know, this practice is not obligatory practice. It doesn't work if you feel like you should do it. If you feel like you have to do it, okay, if I'm a good Buddhist, then I will give this thing up. I will give that up. I'll give this up. I should. Then it doesn't work that way. It's only when your heart gives it up and offers it up. So no one can force you, not including you. Even you can't force you to do this practice. You can't expect or force yourself to do it. You can cultivate it. You can cultivate it. It's not done by a force of will. So going back to that metaphor, beautiful metaphor of Gills with the watering hole and suffering, attending to your suffering, when you sit with your suffering, then nobody has to convince you. Nobody has to make you or force you to give what is causing the pain up. It just happens on its own. You get to see it yourself. Like one example is overeating. It's a simple example, but that's an easy one to see. I know that for me, there are times that I would be afraid that my blood sugar would drop, or because I have blood sugar issues. So I would eat more than I needed, and then I would be heavy afterwards. I would be completely heavy and kind of comatose afterwards because I had overeaten. So it was easy to give it up, right? It just, like, of course I offer this up. There's no use to this overeating. Yeah, it's pleasant. It's kind of fun to feel a full belly for 2 seconds. And then it turns sour, it becomes suffering. So being with suffering, just being with it, noticing, really being curious about it, sitting with it, then the mind turns away. The mind says, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I also remember there was a time, some time ago, when there was some story about something in my mind. And there was something I was really upset about. There was someone I was very upset about, and the story kept coming back up in my daily life. It was a non-retreat. Kept coming back up, this narrative, like, and it kept going on for a while until I tuned into the suffering. At first, it was just the anger, and the anger, as many of you know and have experienced with, anger has honey tip and poison root. The honey tip is the part that feels really good. You feel self-righteous, you feel strong, you feel powerful. Like, yeah, anger gives you all of that. But then at the root of it, so that's the honey tip, the tip that keeps you going. And then at the root of it, it's poisoned. Ew, it just feels awful. It poisons your whole being. Anger, it feels bad. It hurts. It hurts. So with this, what was going on, which is a very, very difficult, complicated situation, the story kept coming up, which was not resolved. And for a while, I think my mind just didn't see, wasn't quite tuned into the suffering. I mean, it was unpleasant, but was more in the, they could have done this, why not have that, why not do this? Or, you know, all the, you know, we've all had that. Anybody not had that? Any? So, and at some point, I think my mind started to tune into, oh, this hurts. This really hurts. Ugh, it's just this sick feeling in my body. And that was the beginning of the end, because it came up maybe a few more times, and then my mind just recoiled, said, you know, I just don't want to go there anymore. My mind gave it up. It just gave it up. I didn't want to go there anymore. So that's what I mean by relinquishment. Your mind just relinquishes it. It gives it up. It's just not interested anymore. It doesn't provide anything. It never provided anything. It's just I was blind to the suffering. I could only see the pleasure of it. There is pleasure in anger. Notice that. And then really tune into the suffering of it. There's a lot more unpleasant in the anger than the pleasant, but we usually don't see it. We're not tuned into it. So in this sutta, in Majjhima Nikaya 140, that we're relating to you for these teachings, chaga, the verb for chaga, the verb that is used, chaga manubruheya, that's my best Pali, manubruheya, chaga manubruheya. So the verb bruhetti has two different feelings, has two different tones to it. One is to cause to grow, to increase. So the way we would actually practice this or engage with chaga, with this relinquishment, would be to cause it to grow, to increase it, hence to promote it and to develop it, to practice it. So there is this idea of promoting, developing, cultivating. There's also, and also along that is to foster, to look after, to enjoy. I like this meaning, to enjoy this practice, because there is joy in it. There is joy in this practice. I mean, when I gave that angry story up, my goodness, there was joy. Of course there was joy. There was ease. I wasn't hounded by that awful realm anymore. So to promote, to develop, to practice, to look after, to foster, to enjoy. There's also another sense of the translation, which is to devote oneself to devote oneself to this practice, to devote oneself to it. So it is a practice to be promoted, to be fostered, to be enjoyed, to be looked after. I like the look after. It kind of has a care about it. You look after this practice in your heart, this practice of relinquishment, and to devote yourself to it. So what would we practice with? What is there? Well, there is so much to practice with. There is so much to let go of, to devote oneself, to have relinquishment towards. The first thing that often comes up to our mind is things, objects, things. And so giving up, offering up, relinquishing, letting go of stuff. We have a lot of stuff. There is this movement. It's called the minimalist. It's called the minimalism movement. And there's a website called theminimalists.com. Has anyone heard of it? I'm curious. Yeah, a bunch of people have heard of it. Yeah. So there are two people who basically started this movement, and they have quite a compelling TED Talk, which might be one of the most 20 watched ever TED Talks. Pretty entertaining, interesting. So, and there's a whole movement now. There's a whole movement. There's a book. There's a movement of people who are minimalists. And I went to their website today, and I want to share with you a few paragraphs from what they write. And as you humor me as I read a few paragraphs of theirs and share it, and pay attention. It's what was very interesting to me as I was reading. They use concepts and words that we use. They use the word freedom. You find freedom when you give up stuff, when you become a minimalist. So listen to it in that sense, in that term, that they're using these terminology too. And here, of course, we're talking about relinquishment. It's a much deeper sense. It's not just stuff. It's a lot. It's habit patterns. It's sufferings. It's angry stories we tell ourselves, etc. We shall talk about more. But see how they talk about it also in terms of stuff. I think it's very valuable. So here we go. So they start. So what is this minimalism thing? It's quite simple. To be a minimalist, you must live with less than 100 things. You can't own a car or a home or a television. You can't have a career. You must live in exotic, hard-to-pronounce places all over the world. You must start a blog. You can't have children. And you must be a young white male from a privileged background. Okay, we're joking. Obviously. They got me with the first sentence, I have to say, the first paragraph. And they go on saying, but people who dismiss minimalism as some sort of fad usually mention any of the above restrictions as to why they could never be a minimalist. Minimalism isn't about any of those things, but it can help you accomplish them. If you desire to live with fewer material possessions, or not own a car or a television, or travel all over the world, then minimalism can lend a hand, but that's not the point. And I appreciate that. That's not the point. The point is something else. Okay, we continue. I think this is a Dharma teaching, which is why I'm sharing a Dharma talk. This is pretty cool. Minimalism is a tool that can assist you in finding freedom. Freedom. That sounds familiar to us. Freedom from fear, freedom from worry. Freedom from overwhelm, freedom from guilt, freedom from depression, freedom from the trappings of the consumer culture we've built our lives around. Real freedom. That doesn't mean there is anything inherently wrong with owning material possessions. Today's problem seems to be the meaning we assign to our stuff. We tend to give too much meaning to our things, often forsaking our health, our relationships, our passions, our personal growth, and our desire to contribute beyond ourselves. Want to own a car or a house? Great, have at it. Want to raise a family and have a career? If these things are important to you, then that's wonderful. Minimalism allows you to make these decisions more consciously, more deliberately. And then, this is an interesting paragraph. There are plenty of successful minimalists who lead appreciably different lives. Our friend Leo Babauta has a wife and 6 children. Joshua Bicker has a career he enjoys, and a family he loves, and a house and a car in suburbia. Conversely, Colin Wright owns 51 things and travels around the world. Tammy Strobel and her husband live in a tiny house and are completely car-free. Even though each of these people are different, they all share 2 things in common. They are minimalists and minimalism has allowed them to pursue purpose-driven lives. I think what I appreciate about that, actually, that paragraph is that the same way that our practice looks different for each and every one of us, minimalism, this chaga, this letting go, this relinquishment also looks different for each and every one of us. There are different things we let go of that allow us to be free. It's not the same recipe for every single person. It's not the same recipe. It's very personal because we're all different. We're all different. You continue, but how can these people be so different and yet still be minimalists? That brings us back to our original question. What is minimalism? If we had to sum it up in a single sentence, we would say, minimalism is a tool to rid yourself of life's excess in favor of focusing on what's important, so you can find happiness, fulfillment, and freedom. I like that. You can think of relinquishment that way about anything. To rid yourself of the excess in favor of focusing on what's important, happiness, fulfillment, freedom. Did I need that angry story? That going on and on, I'm right, I'm wrong, I'm right, they're wrong. Do I need that to be free? No. Relinquishment. It's not just about stuff. Continue. A couple more paragraphs. Minimalism has helped us, they say, eliminate our discontent. Again, it's interesting to listen to these from Dharma ears. Eliminate our discontent. Reclaim our time. Live in the moment. I like this one. Live in the moment. Pursue our passions. Discover our mission. Experience real freedom. Create more. Consume less. Focus on our health. Grow as individuals. Contribute beyond ourselves. Which, by the way, this ties into wisdom. Remember the talk when we talked about wisdom to be benefit to ourselves, to be benefit to others, benefit to ourselves and others, the world. The same idea here. See, these teachings tie in to contribute beyond ourselves. The next item they have on the bullet point, rid ourselves of excess stuff, discover purpose in our lives. By incorporating minimalism into our lives, we've finally been able to finding lasting happiness. And that's what we're all looking for, isn't it? We all want to be happy. Minimalists search for happiness not through things, but through life itself. Thus, it's up to you to determine what is necessary and what is superfluous in your life. And the last paragraph I want to share. Through our essays, we intend to present to you ideas of how to achieve a minimalist lifestyle without adhering to a strict code or an arbitrary set of rules. And I think that's important. It's not a strict code. It's not an arbitrary set of rules. It's not a should. It's not a should that you have to give something particular, your favorite shawl. You don't have to give it up. But there's some things that's wise to give up, wise to relinquish. And the last part of what they say is a word of warning, though. It isn't easy to take the first steps, but your journey towards minimalism gets much easier and much more rewarding the further you go. The first steps often take radical changes in your mindset, actions, and habits. Fret not. Etc., etc. They've documented their experiences, etc. But what I like is that the word of warning, the first step is hard. And guess what? You're all here. You've all taken the first step. Yay! That's the hardest part. The rest is easy. So when I think about stuff, when I read this, I remembered about 5 years ago. Yeah, about 5 years ago, I downsized. I gave away a lot of things I owned. clothes, but the biggest part of it for me was relinquishing most of my books. As a bookish person, I gave away about 75-80% of my books. And there was a sense of freedom. They were weighing me down. And my feeling was, some books I had read, some books I thought, oh, I would read them someday. I never read them. And some other books, I just had them. I don't know. I like them. The 20%, 25% I kept are the reference, the ones that you really use and love and read. And the other ones I figured, you know, they're all available. They're in the library. They're online. They're, you know, if I need the information, it's there. I don't need to carry this brick, put it in boxes, put it in storage, pay for storage, more heavy, more stuff. Let it go. Let somebody else enjoy it. I gave them all away to Berkeley Public Library. Boxes and boxes and bags of bags and bags of books. And I'm so glad I did. I love books. Don't get me wrong. I love books. And just the feeling of freedom to let them go. But the interesting thing is that it was the right time. I didn't force myself to do it. It felt good. It felt like I was offering them up. I was as if I was in a balloon. I was in, you know, these beautiful big balloons, and then there were these bricks that I was just kind of like cutting and letting go of, and I could just float and I could be free, and all these possessions, all these books, especially because they're so heavy, they're weighing me down. But that was the feeling of it. There was no feeling of should, that, oh, in order to be a good Buddhist or a good Dharma teacher, I have to reduce my possessions. That's not the idea. And I'm going to say this over and over again. It's because there's no should. It's when your heart offers it up. Oh, yeah, take delight in it. Take delight in that offering up and cultivating that offering up. So, letting go. What else? What else do we let go of? What else do we relinquish? Well, there's also control that we can relinquish. Or rather, illusion of control. Remember, I think I saw this New Yorker cartoon. I couldn't find it today, but I think there are two people, and one person talking to the other person, saying, "Oh, I wish the time. I miss the time when I had the illusion of control." Because for us, we all have the illusion of control in our lives. We don't really have control. And sometimes offering up, just relinquishing even that illusion. Offering up habits of mind, grudges, hatred, the story I shared, anger, narratives we have about others. Oh, they're always this way. They're always that way. They're this kind of a person. Oh, they take advantage of me. Or they're this, they're condescending. Just all these narratives we have about people. How about we just let it go, to relinquish it? And experiment with relinquishing it. You know what it happens if you relinquish a narrative you have about someone and see them with fresh eyes. Just for a change. Experiment. If it doesn't work, don't give it up. Bring it back on. But experiment. Experiment. But especially the narratives we have about ourselves. We have so many stories about ourselves. I'm this kind of a person. Poor me. Or so many narratives we have that actually don't make us happy at all. And they torture us. We torture ourselves with the narratives we have. What if we offered it up? What if we offered these narratives up? We just relinquish them, put them on the lap of the Buddha or the Kuan Yin. Just offer them up. You take it. You take it. Or we offered up some of the emotions, some of the sadnesses. Offered up. I don't need to hold on to this. I don't need to hold on to this regret. Offering it up. Realizing when things are not helpful anymore. And that can be an opening for forgiveness too. forgiving ourselves, forgiving others when we're not stuck. We're not trapped in our own mind. We're not a prisoner of our own mind. Letting go. There's so much to let go of, to offer up. Ajahn Chah says, somebody asked a question, the following question of Ajahn Chah. I'm trying very hard in my practice, but don't seem to be getting anywhere. And this is what Ajahn Chah said. Ajahn Chah, by the way, for those who don't know him, he's the forest master, meditation master in the Theravada tradition and teacher to Jack Kornfield and others. So he answered, this is very important. Don't try to get anywhere in this practice. The very desire to be free or to be enlightened will be the desire that prevents your freedom. You can try as hard as you wish, practice ardently night and day, but if it is still with the desire to achieve in mind, you will never find peace. The energy from that desire will be a cause for doubt and restlessness. No matter how long or how hard you practice, wisdom will not arise from desire. So simply let go. Watch the mind and body mindfully, but don't try to achieve anything. Don't cling even to the practice of enlightenment. Don't cling even to the practice of enlightenment. That's another practice of letting go, offering up, not non-attachment, not clinging. And that's the ultimate freedom. He also says, and you might have heard this quote before, it's a famous one, do everything with a mind that lets go. Don't accept praise or gain or anything else. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. Complete peace. Letting go. Letting go. And again, letting go is something that you cannot will yourself. I'm going to sound like a broken record on this talk, but I really want to drive this point home. You can't force yourself to let go. You can't force, you can't, it doesn't work that way. It does not, don't try to force yourself to let go. Anybody not hear me? Don't force, you can't force yourself to relinquish. It doesn't work that way, it causes more pain. I'm terrible, I'm bad, I can't let go, but it's something that happens. You can turn your mind to it. You can turn your mind to it. You can have a commitment. You can foster it. You can, you know, as we were talking about before, you can cultivate it. You can turn your mind towards the beauty of it, the joy of it, the ease of it, the delight of it. And as the mind sees the suffering in hanging on, when the mind sees the pain, the heaviness, just as we experimented with at the beginning of this talk, you sat with the heaviness of too much stuff accumulation. Oh, you couldn't wait to let that go, right? The mind wants to do that on its own. So tune into the suffering in attachment, in clinging to. When you hold on to something, whether it's stuff, whether it's resentments, whether it's anger, whether it's the stories that you have about yourself, whether I want to become enlightened by the end of this reading, if that wanting, see the harm, see the pain, see the suffering in that want, and when the mind really groks the suffering, the mind by itself lets go, by itself offers up, by itself relinquishes. And then the thing to do at that point in order to cultivate relinquishment is to see the joy, to taste the joy, the delight of relinquishment. That leaves a memory in the heart. It strengthens the memory so that the mind can find its way there easily next time, more easily next time. That's part of the cultivation. So one thing I'm really appreciating about the three practices we've talked about so far, about these foundations actually that we've talked about, and has really become clear to me as we've explored them together, is each of these resolves, each of these commitments can be a path to freedom all by itself. It's a powerful teaching. That's why they are also translated as foundations, which in my mind remind me of the four foundations of mindfulness Satipatthana Sutta, which actually we're sharing in the mornings. The instructions in the mornings are drawn from the Satipatthana Sutta, the foundations of mindfulness, body, mind, etc., etc. But what's really interesting in what we're exploring with wisdom, truth, and vichaga, relinquishment, you know, wisdom all by itself, it's a practice that leads to freedom when you see things as they are. When you see things as they are, and there is not resistance to seeing things as they are, to reality, that is a path to freedom. And then truth, as Gil beautifully talked about, truthfulness, that's one aspect of it, truthfulness in speech, etc. But another aspect of truth is truth as reality, honoring, dedicating ourselves to what is true, what is not imagined, what is true right here, right now, experientially, not imagined, the past, present, future, fantasized, planned. It's right here. This is the truth of this moment. Reality. This is reality. Embracing that completely. That is the path to freedom. And so is chaga, relinquishment, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. I'll share a quote from Ajahn Sumedho about the practice of letting go, relinquishment, offering up, renunciation. So he says, "The practice of letting go is very effective for minds obsessed by compulsive thinking. You simplify your meditation practice down to just two words, letting go. Rather than try to develop this practice and then develop that and then achieve this and go into that and understand this and read the suttas and study the Abhidhamma and then learn Pali and Sanskrit, then the Madhyamika and the Prajnaparamita, get ordination in Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, write books and become a world-renowned authority on Buddhism. Instead of becoming the world's expert on Buddhism and being invited to great international Buddhist conferences, just let go, let go, let go. I did nothing but this for about 2 years. Every time I tried to understand or figure things out, I would say, let go, let go, until the desire would fade out. So I'm making it very simple for you to save you from getting caught in incredible amounts of suffering. There is nothing more sorrowful than having to attend international Buddhist conferences. Some of you might have the desire to become the Buddha of the age, Maitreya, radiating love throughout the world, but instead, I suggest just being an earthworm, letting go of the desire to radiate love throughout the world. Just be an earthworm who knows only two words, let go, let go, let go. You see, ours is the lesser vehicle, the Hinayana. So we only have these simple, poverty-stricken practices. So that can be another aspect of chaga, relinquishment, letting go, offering up.
So let's just sit together for a moment and let the words settle, or you can just offer up all the words. Let them go. Let go. Let go. Do everything with a mind that lets go. Don't accept praise or gain or anything else. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. May we all know the taste of true and complete peace. Thank you for your kind attention.